Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Pivotal Change. As you know, this is a show all about leadership and executives and having influence and trying to grow your influence and your abilities down your path to success. And hopefully, what you get is wisdom and nuggets from today's show and my special guest to make those pivotal changes that are essential for your success and future. Before we dive in here, I kind of want to ask you a question, though. As you're running your business or your team, can you look at yourself and say, are my people systems keeping up with the business that I'm trying to grow, or am I relying on my same old problems and fixes that I always have? We're going to have that discussion with Erica Butler. She's a special guest in the HR world. She is a wonderful, wonderful asset to mid and small and mid-sized organizations. She has her master's degree in HR management. She's worked with a ton of big names across the industry, like the Disney Corporation, to name one. And she is going to be our special guest. So, Erica, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, William. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And we always tell our audience to watch and listen with a pen and paper nearby so they can really trap and capture these nuggets. So we're going to talk about some of these moments that leaders need to realize things about their talent, and just talent alone is not enough. But what I want to ask you first, Erica, is when a small or mid-sized business starts growing quickly, which is always the goal, what people-related cracks usually show up first?
Sure. So I'll say the why behind the cracks, and what we see constantly is the lack of the two-way communication. It's a lot of more of them communicating to the team, and you lose when you grow quickly. There's more people to lead, more happening for the leaders, and a lot of times that two-way communication breaks. So then it leads to turnover, to more drama amongst team members, conflict management, all of that. But if you can keep that two-way communication intact and always have a pulse of where your team's at, you really can avoid a lot of the challenges that we see.
That makes a lot of sense. A two-way communication is much more better, than just a one-line street, from the ivory tower down to the plebes or the peons, and everyone just has to do orders. It's a very 1950s model of business. And so when leaders maybe start to underestimate that, they don't have that two-way communication, what do you start seeing? Is there friction and turnover and other communication breakdowns or some type of culture issues, confusion? Well, what happens with that?
A lot of times there is, team members not maybe being as connected to really what's happening and confusion. They used to be close with the leaders, but now they feel distanced. They don't feel maybe as much recognition, as much support. And yeah, they can lead to, like I was saying, turnover and performance management challenges. They're not as engaged. All of those things go hand in hand.
So lack of engagement is a pretty good one. And I know there's not too many jobs where somebody just sits and hits a button or a lever on a factory line anymore. So engagement is really important for growth. And even on the factory line, if the factory worker says, hey, if we add an extra lever right here, we can increase production. That two-way conversation, that engagement is really important. So is that counterculture to what you see in a lot of people that you work with?
Well, I do think, to your point, William, a lot of leaders, it was good for a long time, so they just assume. And you don't know what you don't know. They just assume, hey, yeah, we're good. We worked together a long time. Especially those rock stars. Those rock stars, they just think they're going to keep performing, but those are the ones you want to stay closest to. And also the challenging performers, right? So yeah, I do see that a lot, and it can happen easily. And just the thing is, a little recognition goes a long way. All this stuff sounds so simple. They call it soft skills, but without plans in place, without having those quarterly focus groups, engagement surveys, there's really easy ways, easy things to do to get ahead of this that so many companies don't do. And that's where we come in and put it in place. And they're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. The feedback is always shocking to them. Oh, every time they learn something. Even me and my own company, we do focus groups every year, and I learned so much, even though I'm close with everybody. So it's so important to do that.
I love that. I'm hearing a lot of intention, and I'm a lot of hearing a lot of proactiveness in your response. And George Patton, he was pretty famous. He says all great plans fail at implementation. And so you had kind of mentioned like an implementation, but it doesn't have a plan. So what's the difference between a company that's just simply busy and they're trying to fire on all cylinders, and a company that's truly structured to scale?
Sure. So I'm a big fan of the book Traction. It's entrepreneur, or sorry, enterprise operating systems. And the ones that are truly scaling, it is planned. They have, like, so we say the go hire way for our company. it's the blank blank way, whatever organization. I'll tell you, a recent client, I was really impressed with them, but they have a very small team, but they said, we want you to build out our employee onboarding, our performance management, everything in the employee lifecycle. Even though we're a few employees, we want to have a land map. We know we're scaling and we want to have really good things in place for our team, but you should do that for finance, for marketing, for every area of the business. And that's what the book Traction talks about for scaling businesses. If you don't have a plan for that, you will not scale in effective ways that you can actually keep up with.
Okay, so if people don't have a plan, so I think people have a really good plan for most of the time, probably onboarding and hiring and stuff like that. I think almost nobody has a good plan for offboarding, right? For firing or termination. But I wrote a little ebook called The First 4 Hours, right? And how this is critical to establishing, you know, culture, customs, the overwhelming amount of open communication and things like that. And when I first implemented that with my first person, like, this is great, we can use this. And I was like, well, this is just one piece of the puzzle. You need a plan or an action similar to the first 4 hours, just like you do in every stage. Like, what about the first 4 hours of their first promotion? What about the first 4 hours of the first vacation they ever take, and what the expectations are? Do they have to answer emails actually, or what, you know? And so there's different ways to do that. I'm a huge fan of structure. So can you expand just a little bit more on maybe some of the ideas of, like, this is where you start looking to know if you even have structure or not?
Well, sure. I think you'll know, like, some companies we work with don't have an employment handbook. They don't have policies and procedures in place. A lot do, but a lot don't. And then it's, or it's just, you know, employees are confused, even as something simple as PTO. I know what I have, but, like, am I allowed to take it? Are there blackout dates? All kinds of things. So I think you pretty much know when employees have a lot more questions. If they're going to come to you with a lot more questions, then you don't have very clear guidelines in place for them. You don't have a place that they can go. They should be able to go to the online handbook and really quick search this policy. There it is. You know what I mean? And also, you know, HR systems, there's so many these days. There's a lot of things you can put in place. If you're getting a ton of questions, you know there's a lack of structure and clarity on the HR side of things.
I like this a lot. And I would almost say, you know, some of the people that I don't do HR work. Again, I reference policies, I encourage policies, but that's not my wheelhouse. But, you know, some people have some really robust SOPs and policies and handbooks, and people just don't know where to find the answer. Maybe they are given this old dusty manual, not even in digital format, on day one, or maybe they don't remember because it was drinking through a fire hose when they got onboarded and all the different links and access. Do you recommend one, like, recurring training, recurring exposure, like a policy a month review where you just shoot out little tidbits to keep people fresh and ultimately keep them communicating up the chain of command?
Yeah, I think anytime there's a new policy, we would have it announced and do, like, you know, at the town hall or whatever. But yeah, anytime we can keep them fresh on everything. But I think, like, as simple as possible, like, one company we work with, they called it a playbook. You don't need a 100-page manual that people can't search through. You have to make it easy to use, searchable, relatable. And I think just doing that in, like, the onboarding plan you talked about, I love your 4-hour idea, but also extending to a 90-day onboarding plan and make sure, like, as part of it, someone on the team takes them through this and they know where to go for everything in detail. And then if it changes, then you can make the announcement, that kind of thing. That's what we do.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. Okay. So that's really good. So how can founders start to recognize then when they have outgrown like these little informal practices and they need formalized people practices? Is there breaking a trigger?
I think they'll see an increase of, like, drama across their team that normally happens, and like people getting upset more easily, needing conflict management. That almost always is the case. And then, of course, turnover again. We always monitor that really closely. And then I just think you have to watch company results. Like, if you notice performance dip, or, like, say on the sales team, less calls are being made out, that kind of thing. Watching your metrics, if you see dips, but no reason why, you can tell that the team's less engaged or that something's going on. They're stressed. There's some issues that you need to kind of peel the onion back and see what's really going on.
Okay, you said a whole lot there, and it's really good. So I want to unpack some of it. So first of all, you mentioned that you have to have metrics. You have to have something to watch to see if there's a dip or a change, or who knows, there's a spike and you found something good and you want to replicate that, but you're not paying attention or don't have a system for that. And so you have to have metrics in place. You have to be in and around your people so that you can observe it, you know, to the capacity where you're not losing your highest and best use as well. And then you go in there and you actually address it. And so you say, if there's more conflict management, there's more drama, if there's more negative attitudes, that's just the feeling in the air where you're like, hey, something's not working right. Is that fair enough?
Yes, and I love what you said about being around your team. I mean, truly, no, like one of the companies I worked at, Fortune 100, I'll never forget this. Some of the presidents would come and visit different business units, and two different ones did this. They literally sat with customer service. They went to the warehouse. So they spent time like hearing from people about their jobs, and they really got a pulse on things. I thought that was so impressive. They could have been pulled a zillion directions, but they, even at that level, so if people at that level have time and see value in that, I think walk the floor, make it a best practice, walk the floor, stop. How was Bobby's game this weekend? Whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like that, it sounds again so simple, but that matters to people. It goes a long way. You don't have that on your calendar, you don't have it in your routines, it's a must. And I know you know that. I know we're on the same page with this one
Oh,
because
so
I knew
I
already heard
love
it.
that. I love that. And so I think that's a great answer. And I think you literally said, put it on your calendar. So traditionally I've not been super good as like my mind goes 100 different directions. I've not been super good of forcing time to spend with people. I do it very organically once we're face to face, but I've got to go force myself to get face to face, or I'll just sit here and hack at my keyboard and stay on the calls and in the meetings all the time. So this gives me a pretty good spot to stick a pin in the conversation. We're going to jump to our first commercial break, but here in just a couple of minutes, we'll be back with more Erica and more HIHR in just a moment. Sit tight for more Pivotal Change. Welcome back from the break, and we're going to jump right back with Erica Butler in just a second. But before, I want to make sure you know how to stay connected to this show and all of the other shows on Now Media TV. If this is your favorite show, which I hope it is, there are still lots of other great shows that you can get anytime. They are on demand. You can download them for free from Now Media TV. There's an app. You can get it on Roku or iOS, and you can unlock all of the nonstop bilingual programming, English and Spanish, of your choice. Again, you get everything from business and leadership to lifestyle and culture, politics, and beyond. Now Media TV is also available to be downloaded as a podcast. So if you can't watch and just want to listen on the go, you can grab it there too. So we're back with Erica Butler of Hire LLC, HIHR LLC, and she is a real wizard in HR and helping people structure for their growth. That was a large part of the conversation we had just a moment ago before the break. But Erica, we're going to jump into talking a little bit more about that Fortune 100 experience, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Love talking about it.
Got it. Well, that's not an experience most humans alive even get to have, but those environments tend to be a little different. But I do want you to maybe pull out a little bit that you can say the Fortune 100 environments, this translates very powerfully down to the small and mid-sized organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the one I was a part of for 6 years, they one of their values was intensity. And I do think anytime you're in any organization, there has to be a level of intensity for yourself, but everyone you hire. Because to make an impact, to really add value out there, it takes time, it takes effort. It's no joke. So I think the fact that they put that as a value and they hired people for that, they were known for hiring some of the most hardworking, motivated people out there, just also high integrity. So I think as business owners, we are our teams and having really high standards of who we're bringing on. And the beautiful thing is, when you start hiring, I'll call them A players. A players love to work with other A players. And if you can get really good at attracting and finding these A players, you build a team of them and they don't want to leave because they're so happy to work with other A players because they want to work with people who care as much as they do. And it just brings them a lot of joy. It helps their passion. It truly works. The other piece is, I always say clear is kind. Those organizations are typically very good at being very clear of the expectations, job descriptions, performance management. You know where you stand. And they really value that. And they put a lot of effort in place, even succession planning. If you're going to be in a role in the future, they have a plan for you and you know about that. And that's something really important we could bring to small and mid-sized companies more and more.
Okay, I am in love with that entire answer. And I did my own medicine and I took down some notes. So I'm going to rehash some of the notes that I took.
Okay, great.
First of all, one of my seven pillars of influential leadership is clear expectation and boundaries. And so having those clear expectations, you're giving people permission. They know exactly how far they can go before they have to hit a boundary and then come back and ask permission, stuff like that. But one of the real statements that jumped off to me was, I'm just going to read it. Now, as business owners, we are our team. I think that's huge. I wanted to echo that into the audience again, because you are not just the people you surround yourself as a person, you know, the common, oh, you are the average of the five people you associate, but as a business owner, you are the team that you assemble around and work with every day. I think that's huge. And then you led into the A players love A players. Okay. I would say there's maybe one exception to that, and that's if an A player turns themselves into a coach and mentor, they want the C player that they can create an A player out of, but ultimately it stands true. They want an A player, right? And nothing gets an A player more frustrated than having to deal with the C student over here that's just dragging their feet, riding the coattails of the team, getting the bare minimum done. And that really crushes culture, and people ultimately vote for leaders with their feet. They either line up and follow them or they turn and walk away. And so, you know, that's a huge, huge statement. You said you said a lot in that statement. I think people really, really need to sharpen their expectations, be real clear, and then make sure that they are building a culture of A players that are going to support and grow other A players. That was awesome. Thank you for that response.
Yeah, easier said than done, right? I know you and I both know a lot of tools to make that happen, but that is the magic.
That is the magic. So getting back to this large organization thought, usually they understand about systems pretty well. You're starting to emphasize that pretty heavy for us. Smaller companies usually have to learn the hard way. Is there something you can do to help us learn? Because I always tell people, true wisdom is learning from other people's mistakes. A fool never learns from their mistakes. The average person learns when they fail and makes adjustment, but the wise learn from other people's mistakes. What large company issues can a small person take away from your experience to not have to reach that failure first?
What I have witnessed from these larger organizations, it's they're obsessed with continuous improvement and they want everybody on the team to be obsessed with it. And they are willing to call out issues. Some companies I've worked with, they say this culture of like on boss throughout the whole organization with support. You know, you have processes and resources and leaders to go to, but the more you can give every team member, like even going off of a big company like Target, they let for a long time, I don't know if it's still the policy, but they allow cashiers up to $20 if there was a dispute, bring them through. Don't slow up the line. Like the more you can give every single level of the organization ability to make decisions and ability to fix things and make improvements and encourage them to do so, then the whole organization is every day making improvements, and that's powerful.
I think that's really a powerful, and I think one, not only is there a logistics side of it, like don't hold up the line, right? Let the
Yes.
cashier make the $20 difference. The Ritz-Carlton company as well, the Ritz, they do a $2,000. Any employee, me all the way down from the bellhop to the concierge of their most premier hotel, can make a $2,000 decision with any one client. And the largest that's ever been spent is like $670, right? And that was over like a complete catastrophe, but it empowers everyone. And
Yes.
then I like your statement about being obsessed with continuous improvement. I think that's really fantastic that we have to make sure we never allow ourselves to settle. It's okay for a moment to be satisfied with your achievement, but you can't become complacent because then you stop improving. And so I think you're bringing some really heavy messages that people need to hear. So
And William,
the
really quick,
yes, go ahead. Yeah.
maybe the improvement needs to be recognition. You know? So it's some of the improvements are going to be recognition, favorable things for the team forever. You know what I mean? It's not all like metrics. And yes, that's important,
Yes.
but just wanted to call that out.
I think that's a great call out. I think thank you for throwing that in there, because I think that's something that's really, really dry in the overall Western culture. And that's that we're not recognizing people's life. And you should recognize them publicly, not in private. Punish in private, recognize and celebrate in public. So let's talk about the take from me. I just exited an accounting firm recently. We were a small firm, 17 people. We're in Kentucky, so we kind of got that casual Southern culture. We got our policies in place. We've got our culture, but I would fear growing too fast and all of a sudden becoming really bureaucratic by just tons of HR policies and stuff like that. How do I keep maybe my Kentucky culture, my hometown touch, while growing and professionalizing myself, but just not turning into this corporate bureaucracy?
Great question. Yes, less bureaucratic is always better, kind of to the point we were talking about. So for your handbook, for a small organization, really, what are the local, state, and federal laws? And that's it. And then what other processes do you absolutely need? We don't, our company, we don't want to hold people back because they have to have A, B, C, jump through hoops, five approvals. That doesn't make sense. That doesn't do anyone good. But I know some organizations do operate that way. So less is more. Have what you need to cover you from a compliance perspective. Have clear processes and policies, and the rest give flexibility. And the thing is, people, we operate in the gray in HR. Some people have seen black and white. Oh, this is the policy, so we can't. But sometimes someone truly needs an LOA. Sometimes there's, you just have, the person is the person, and you want to be as fair as possible, but it is gray, and you have to take all the information and make the best decision. And that's how you don't get stuck in bureaucratic processes, if that makes sense.
So take all the relevant information you have at the time, compare it to the policies in place, make the best decision. And
Yes.
one of our rules was always, if you do not have a clear-cut policy and it's in the gray area, you default to the side of being a decent human, right? And
Yes.
so that was good. And so you're saying it is very possible, especially with consultants and companies like yours, to not lose speed and flexibility, and definitely not accountability. You get to keep your entrepreneurial energy while becoming more systematic and ultimately safe and efficient in the HR world.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's how it should be.
Okay, so let's do this. I want you to give me a good little minute or so thought out answer on what is one Fortune 100 leadership practice, specifically leadership practice, that entrepreneurs could adopt immediately.
Sure, one of the best ones I've ever seen lived out that I learned through what Fortune 100, but also the cool thing to see enforced in a group called Entrepreneurs Organization. They're all about Vern Harnish founded it. It's like 17,000 strong around the world, and many more are involved, but they scale up organizations. And that is what they do. Everyone in it has to have like a $1 million organization or more, and billions. They just have so much. But in Fortune 100, this literally, they did it, and they're doing it in scale up too, which is so cool. It just works. So what I'm going to share in your hiring, don't just look at the exact skills, the experience. Don't just look at that. Look at drive. Look at wins. Look at attitude. That is going to carry a person more than saying, okay, this accountant had 5 years. This one only has one, but this one is a self-starter, has the good attitude, is like hungry. And that is what they did. And having the freedom to do that at Fortune 100, Mark Casper, our CEO, he always said that. He said it on big town hall calls. He talked about that all the time because that's the team he was building. And obviously, it keeps paying off. So same thing with small business. Really pay attention to that. Don't always hire for the person with the most experience. They could be the one, but look at attitude, drive, those other things that you really can't teach someone. You can't force someone to be like that, but that is, are the people that really are the go-getters that make the impact.
I love that so much. We, especially in the accounting world, which is where I have my heaviest influence in consultation, I say, stop hiring for pedigree. Who cares about the initials and the credentials behind the name? You need culture, you need drive, you need personality, you need these character traits, and you can teach the skill later, right? If you just have the skill, you've got all these other problems. But before we cut to commercial break, I want to make sure our viewers know where to find you, where to find hire, and how to get a hold of you. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to our website. It's Go Hire, so GOHIHR.com. Comment boxes, we check them every day. Also, we're active on LinkedIn, so you can type our company name in. You can find me as well, Erica Butler, on LinkedIn, and we'd love to hear from you and love to engage with anyone who also cares a lot about this content.
That is fantastic. All right. Well, we are going to take a break. We've reached the halfway point. We'll be back with more Pivotal Change in just a moment.
Thank you.
Welcome back from the break. You've reached the halfway point, and I, William Kahn, am going to continue hosting this fantastic episode with Erica Butler from Hire LLC. And we just got done talking about something that you can change really quick in your leadership style is you can stop hiring so much for the skill set, the experience, and start looking at the character and the personality traits. So not so much the pedigree and the credentials, but literally the drive and the individual and what you can do with them to grow and create the exact type of employee you want. And there's going to be methods and ways to do this. So, Erica, I want you to introduce to us one way that you're certified in that we can start exploring that realm to find the right type of people that are either working with us or going to be working with us in the future.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'd love to share more about DISC. It is an incredible tool that helps companies find ways to communicate better and just understand where people are coming from. I learned this speaking of Fortune 100, I don't know, 15 years ago, and it was just mind blowing. And just to share a very quick personal story to see like how much this impacts people. I remember learning about, so I'm a high I, which is influential, driven, but you know, we all have wins and we all have challenges in that. And I when I saw how people read me, when I saw on paper and if people shared what they think of someone like me who communicates like me with my hands, with you know, the full all in, I was shocked. And it also explained why people react, why they thought I was not genuine sometimes, which was so frustrating to me that I was so gonna do everything I said. And I always did, but as someone who's a C conscientious, they wanted the data first. They didn't want the relationship. So little things like that you learn, and it just helped me to understand where people are coming from and connect with anybody in that sphere, and they train you how to do that. So anyone who hasn't used this tool, it is a game changer for any business. And there's many great tools out there. We talked about Myers-Briggs, Insights, but this is really powerful tool.
And I agree with you, and I love that story. That's really fun. It made me think of something that I just learned at a recent conference I went to. We spoke about that earlier, but one of the questions that was asked is, have you ever thought about what it's like to sit across from you and receive you? Like, what is it like to receive your communication, your style, expectations? Is it like pulling teeth, trying to get stuff out of you? Or do you come across as like overly, you know, assertive, even aggressive and demanding? What is it like to receive you? I was like, wow. And so your story using DISC really help you made you aware of that. So tell us a little bit more about how DISC can help leaders understand communication patterns, maybe build trust or help reduce friction. And if you don't do it right, it could create friction, right?
Sure. So I think when you don't have these tools, you just can't be as self-aware because you don't know what you don't know. Me seeing that and learning that these even exist was it just made me be able to be so much more effective in building our business and helping people in HR. So I think what people can do, even if they don't use these tools, learning to, yeah, like you said, like how am I coming across? Asking your team how they like to be communicated to. What works when I communicate, what doesn't, reading the room, spending more time listening and asking those questions and talking about it, making it a priority on your team to talk about it every year. Our team, we just did it last week. We have a retreat. We all go over where we are in DISC and how we can work better together. Like literally prioritize this for your team and you will see the results very quickly. And now you have a shared language you can go off of to navigate conflict, to work better together in the future.
Okay, I like all of it. I'm like two particular things you said. I said working backwards, you said one, now you have a shared language that you can go off of and you can say, hey, you got the DISC, you got I'm this and you're that. So now we're doing the exact language and I can say, oh, I can, you know, step on the brakes real quick and change my approach and go into your style of communication and perception. So that's a big one. And then the other one you said, it says without tools like this, you cannot be as self-aware. And I thought that was really important that if you're seeking to be a good leader, you are ultimately going to work on yourself and become more self-aware. And this is an outstanding way to do that. It reminds me I can be a pretty go, go, go person. I have historically sometimes been referred to as a squirrel on crack, you know, with just like I'm eager and energy and like I'm high drive, you know, and I'm really motivational, want to get people fired up. And then, of course, that's not everybody. Some people will sit back, want to think about it, receive the information, be real logic and methodical in their approach. And I'm like, I'm super analytical, but I'm like, let's go. Let's go ahead and hit the switch and go. And so I just got slapped in the face and I was like, I need to stop approaching so-and-so like that because it's probably driving them nuts. And they were like, yes, it is. And I was like, okay. And that came from a DISC assessment. So,
wow.
So
Oh, can I
this,
add one thing?
yeah, please do.
William, one step further, we have clients that actually use this in hiring. It's not the make or break, but they know maybe on one of their teams they're lacking a D, someone who is going to drive it forward and have that, or they're lacking a C with the details. And they actually make a point to say it would be great to bring this type of person onto the team because they see that all four work so well together. They balance each other out. That's a strong team in most cases, right? So yeah, like people use it even to that extent, which I think is so brilliant.
I think that's a very good way to do it, and that's kind of like I mentioned to you before, the six styles of working geniuses. That's its exact purpose, is to say, what are you missing? And it gives a mechanism of gears in a machine, and it says, hey, you're missing this personality type in the machine, and it's going to help your system crank faster. So tell me a little bit about communication style awareness and any way that it can prevent unnecessary conflict inside a team. So a little bit on that more micro level, and not maybe the umbrella leadership style.
Sure. So I'll give you just a specific example. So what you described earlier, it sounds like the D style dominance. People who have this style, they want to get there fast. They see where they're going and they want to get there and they want to pull everyone with them. And in that, it's known that they step on others' toes, they run them over even, and they can offend people. It's almost people get their feelings hurt sometimes, and they're direct. They'll send a direct email, one liner, and but the thing is, if you talk to someone doing this, it's because they don't mean anything by it. They're just, let's get the job done, guys. Love you all. Like, we're all good. Let's just get to the point. But if you can teach this person how it comes across to others and back them up, and I've seen this happen many times, they can really get people on the bus. You said you're only leading when people are following, or the feet are behind you. They can really meet people where they're at. And like for an S, make sure an S, there's someone who's very collaborative. Did everyone on the table get to share their feedback? They're going to even have better results as a D because they're going to be able to slow down enough to hear from more people, and they're going to be more planful about it, more aware of what they're missing out on. Because we always say go slow to go fast. They're going to have a way better result when they take everyone with them. That's just one really practical example.
Okay, so I think that practical example leads me to this. So I guess this intercultural intelligence, right? This ability to put all these pieces together, that's becoming much more of a critical leadership skill, not just some like diversity, we got to have it. It's talking about you want literal different cultural backgrounds because they may have different DISC assessments, and you may see go have a DISC assessment and say, we need this to be in here. That's getting more critical, especially. A lot more people are a lot broader reach remotely, both nationally and internationally.
Ooh, I just love that you said that, William. So when I this is a work, this is a type of work, intercultural intelligence. I'm like certified in this, also DISC, but it's not, we get diversity and inclusion, that gets thrown around a lot. So I thought I'm really good at this stuff. I know this, but you're right, William, it's so much deeper than that. There's actually proven three worldviews that people came up on and what how they are raised. It's innocence versus guilt, honor and shame, and power fear. And that and I could do another episode on this, but when we can spend time to really understand where people are coming from, especially if we work internationally. And today we're all working somewhat internationally, let's be honest, because of how many people move. Oh my gosh, the communication you can give and the plan, it's going to reach them where they're at. There's a fact that 70% of companies with international change fail. 70%, because they miss this, because it doesn't register. Like people will say yes to their face, but they're going to not do it. Like I could give you so many examples, but the DISC personality piece plus the culture piece, if you can really know both, you can lead change around the whole world. And it really matters to get to the other side of success and win as a team.
I love that so much. And one thing that is really powerful for me, and it really was almost just a piece or a part of just like this little nugget of training. Back in my law enforcement days, we got cultural training. And, one of the big things was like, hey, when you interact with people and you realize they're from another culture, they're not all Midwest Southern, Americans, and they're not going to respond the same way to simple things like body position, proximity, eye contact, the canter and pace of your speech. And so like one of the big ones was like, we'll just take maybe a Latino-based ethnic background. The eye contact is going to be different. The male and female dynamics, if you have like a husband and wife spouse, are going to be different in how you do that. And so me, I was able to like turn on the light bulb and be like, I'm talking to this person all wrong, see? And you can change yourself and do things. And without, of course, giving up on, investigative integrity or giving up on, civil rights or safety for officers or anything like that. And the DISC blends right into that. How does that work in the workplace culture, like you're saying as well?
Well, going off of all of this, what I'm stealing this from an incredible consultant that I work with who is doing major stuff around the world, but she explains it like a bamboo. And she says that you still stay in your root, you still be yourself. Because we get the question, well, how if I have to change how I'm communicating, can I still be me? Yes, you can be yourself. But when you have all this extra information that can help you, you kind of sway. You have your root, but you can blow in the wind far to all these and reach people where they're at, but you stay in your root and you still be you. And you can talk openly about these things. So that's just one picture of as leaders, the more we can be like a bamboo, the more we can lead effectively and meet people where they're at and motivate them and touch their hearts and make an impact in their lives. Because that's what it's all about, in my opinion, anyway.
I love it. Making an impact, having good, healthy, positive influence. And I really like the bamboo because one, that's not a cultural example you would give typically for the United States, which doesn't
From
have native bamboo.
Japan.
So I love the fact that you use another culture's example to do that. That's really fantastic. Let's go ahead and push the pause button here real quick, and we're going to really kick off on this final stretch of pivotal change, and we'll be right back with more Erica. Welcome back to Pivotal Change for the final stretch of the night. And I know what we ultimately have to call a good thing to an end, but we're going to rock out the last part of this conversation. But make sure if you've missed any of it, you want to rewatch or you want to see future episodes, you go to nowmedia.tv. You can download the app, Roku, iOS. You can find it everywhere. You can even go to YouTube, but the webpage right there has the bilingual programming. Everything you can find. It's got the full mix and it's got all of your favorite shows like Pivotal Change. Download it anytime, anywhere, and you can even get the podcast version. So, Erica, back to you. We were talking about the culture and the changes of the way you hire and hiring for personality traits, and we were having a really good time talking about DISC and some examples with that. So, we now want to spin back to some of these people that are trying to lead their companies, and they've got leaders. Tend to start bringing in HR professionals or HR systems that are real, I'm going to say, distinctively carved out only when something goes wrong. What opportunities are they already missing out if they're just waiting for something to fail first?
Ooh, that is just so true because that is over half the time when we get the calls, this crisis happened. They call because of the crisis. Who can we call? And that's where we get the call. And what they're missing out on, the call already happens when we're losing a rock star employee, when we have a lawsuit, when we lost sleep and we're so stressed out, we don't know what to do next. That's when the calls happen. And all of that could be avoided. I truly believe that. All of that could have been had plans around it and done so much better to avoid all of those pain. Because HR, I think, is one of the most stressful things leaders hold because it involves their people and they care a lot about their people. It brings a lot of stress to them and doesn't have to be that way.
I think that's well said. It's super stressful because we care a lot about our people. And ultimately, when you care about your people, it also has probably a deeper impact. I think most entrepreneurs would rather lose a few bucks than really damage or harm the reputation and relationship they have with their people. So with that being said, if we don't want to wait for the crisis and we want to pick up maybe some of those good, clear expectations and boundaries along the way, why should HR be part of our actual growth planning? I want to get big and bigger, and I want to go from a two-person company to a 20 to 200 to 2,000, right? The leadership development, the operational strategy ought to have an HR in it. Explain why that's important.
I'd like to speak to a misconception first that HR is a soft skill and that anyone can do it. You can learn it, like a lot of things, but most people in this field are in it because they're passionate about it and they know what works and they know what doesn't. So, one specific example, if you're growing that fast and that's the goal, there's a little tool called talent calibration, and you literally put your team in a box. You meet every quarter and you make sure you know, not in a box in a bad way, in a box. hey, this person is a high performer. Are they being developed? Are they getting support? This person's in a low box. There's something wrong. Do they need more training or is it not a fit? It makes you have a plan for your people and talk about it. This alone is going to make your company run so much smoother when you have a plan like this in place. Most organizations, even those who have been leaders for 20 plus years, said, I never seen anything like this, never heard anything like this. They put it in place. They're like, wow. You know, so like that's one tangible example that especially small to mid-sized businesses, we will bring and elevate their business immediately.
I love that a lot. So we do, traditionally, we do two evals a year. One of them is a quicker eval. It's more of a reflexive eval after like the busy season. Then we sit down. It's more of a combination with a couple of checkmark questions to ask. And then the other one is your annual eval. And it has your seven core categories with, you know, three categories underneath. So it's a 21 component list. And we go through that and that helps determine a lot of stuff. But what we call the put your people in the box, the high performers, low performers, we call it the 80-20 or the 10-80-10 philosophy. And, you know, there's a whole lot of science and numbers behind that. But I think what you're doing is you're trying to get everybody in that top 10 performer slot, which is possible because you have people like the FBI hostage rescue team. You have people like, you know, your elite executive teams at like the Disney Corporation for whatever. They're the highest of high performers. You know, so everybody can be a high performer. You just got to get them there. And that's one of the things people are missing out by not having that HR strategy is you're not constantly cultivating that person into that next stage, that next phase, that next box. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, absolutely. And when there's no plan, those people don't feel like there's a plan for their career. And that comes up on, we've done thousands of employee surveys, thousands, and that always comes up, career development. Even when companies have it, it just matters to people a lot. And they'll leave when they don't feel like they have a path, especially the top performers.
Yeah. Where there is no plan, the people perish. It's a famous proverb.
There you go.
One hard reality we had to face a while ago is we had internal growth was been a huge portion for us, but we didn't have the actual career path spelled out. Like, what does it mean to be, let's just say, a junior accountant, a staff accountant, a senior accountant, and then a profit sharing accountant, which would be a leadership type role. And we were just kind of winging it, and we knew in our head what we wanted, but then we actually wrote it down. Here are the core competencies that must be achieved for every level. And then everybody knows that if I don't have these six core competencies, I can't go to phase two, right? And if I don't have these additional eight core competencies, I can't go to phase three. And that comes with extra time off, extra pay, extra responsibilities. And I think that sounds like something you're giving smaller and mid-sized companies more access to, more ideas and structure around.
They know what to work on. That's a great example. They're not guessing. They literally know what to work on to get there.
I love it. So take out the guesswork is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then is there any, like any type of increased risk when HR is treated as like just paperwork or just something that's a necessity? We got to have HR. We got to have a policy. What's the risk there?
Yes, we do have companies approach us with that. They really only want compliance. They only want the handbook. Oh, we got the rest. We got the rest, which honestly, some of them like yourself are fantastic leaders and they do a really good job with a lot of this. Great. But the risk is this lack of two-way communication. Like when we take on a new client, we want to immediately either do some type of focus group, meet the team, a brief pulse survey, because if we're just hearing from the leaders all the time and we're just helping them fix the problems they have, we have a big gap of information. We really don't know. We're only hearing from them. That's only their opinion. There could be fires happening that everyone's scared to tell about that happens. So that's why I think they're missing out if they just go to HR for compliance and not all the other ways we can love on the team, lift the team, develop the team. That team's going to miss out on a lot and that company will miss out on a lot.
I like that a lot. And generally, you know, I do consulting in a slightly different arena, but I'll tell the leaders like, hey, when I come in here, they're like, hey, can you help fix my company, fix my team, help us do this? I was like, the first place I'm going to look is at you. Right. I said, you're going to have to make changes first. And the reason that, and I'll sugarcoat it, but the reason that you're probably struggling is your fault. You're the leader. The buck stops here type of scenario. So we're going to fix you first. And that's also going to be lead by example when we ask other people to make changes and stuff like that, and implement new HR policies and stuff like that. So
you're right, though. The lead by example, you can't hire A players if you're not behaving like an A player.
That, absolutely. Amen to that, sister. That's absolutely right. So a lot of people think they have to maintain like a full HR person or full HR department or something like that. How can that be solved with outsourcing HR and not having to take on extra staff and an extra division inside your company?
Yeah, so we've been doing this now almost 8 years, and I think I know what keeps us in business is many companies don't need a full-time HR person. And if they did hire a full-time HR, they're going to know maybe be a generalist or they'll be at certain one level. What the best thing is when you work with HR consulting companies, we have all the levels. You don't need a director to handle a task at times, you know? So what we do, it's very cost effective because we get retainers. We lock into a retainer and say, all right, these are the hours every month, but you just don't need to be paying a full-time salary, benefits, all of that. And we can work with them and meet them at where they're at with what they really need, with the talent level that they really need. And I think that is huge cost savings for people in the long run. And
Yeah,
if they need
it's
a full-time person, we're going to help them with that. We always will work to that for them
okay.
if that ends up being the case, because that's important.
You pre-answered my next question. I said, if they do end up needing a full-time person because growth is good, do you help find or place those people? And you do. So that's great.
We celebrate that because that's wonderful. And because eventually, if you are scaling, you're going to need that for certain. And we'll wrap around that person. We work with several companies that we support their HR person department of one, you know? So that's a model we have also.
Like that. I like that a lot. So the part is they could kind of dial up. And you probably have maybe a couple stages of service based on, because again, a company with two people versus 20 versus 200 people, they're going to have more and less. In theory, they should have more and less HR concerns, issues, and just constant demands. But that's pretty good. So with that, knowing that you can outsource the HR, be much more efficient, highly professional with what you folks offer. What should every executive then be understanding about the link between their ultimate people strategy and their business performance?
If they are serious about scaling and doing it well, I'm quoting a person I worked with, an executive in Fortune 100 again, and he said to me, "It's you, me, and finance. I'm leading all the operations." You know, he was the GM, and we're tied at the hip. Every week we met with an action plan, me, the finance leader, and him, and we just ran together. And it was amazing. We made so much progress. So I just took that. And if that's not the case for finance leaders and HR professionals, you really have to give that feedback because when you're on the same page with those three, a lot can happen and the rest will follow. But that if you're not taking that seriously, you're really shooting yourself in the foot a bit because it truly is a beautiful, impactful combination.
I love that. And I agree with you so much. And I like the way you said, hey, we treated ourselves like we were tied at the hip. I love a good action plan. That's something I advocate and preach and I force people to do before I ever exit their doors from consulting and stuff like that. So here's what I want to do. You have said some really profound stuff, things that are going to literally help people make that pivotal change in their careers. Where do they find you? How do they get in touch with you? I am certain people are going to want to call you.
Well, wonderful. You can reach us at our website at gohire.com, GOHIHR.com. Also, we're very active on LinkedIn. You can type in HIHR, LinkedIn, we're there. You can send a comment, reach out, and also my LinkedIn page, Erica Butler. Happy to connect with anyone who's interested in learning more about human resources, leadership, and these important topics.
Erica, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. This has been amazing.
Thank you, William. I love what you're doing as well. I'm really blown away. You are a really great leader. I'm really impressed. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And for all of you audience members out there, I want to challenge you to go out in the world and see the change and be the change. We'll catch you right here next time on Pivotal Change.